Wait a minute, what am I doing? Two men in a what? Two friends from film school, one who graduated, one who did, and they decided to make a podcast. Okay, this has never been done before, right? Okay. This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.
So I'm thinking of getting top surgery.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why?
Because like I have this problem that when people pull my hair, I moan.
What does that have to do with top surgery?
It's going to make me a top.
Oh, okay.
That's really good. That's real good, dude.
No, it's...
That's all I was thinking about after... Like, say what you will about this Quebec motherfucker. It's mostly positive things that most people like this director. But he understands how to light Florence Pugh's beautiful brown eyes.
Yeah.
I'll just pause it, just stare at him, and just get lost in him.
He sets up a very beautiful shot.
Specifically for Florence Pugh's beautiful brown eyes.
I think you just very much like Florence Pugh.
I do like Florence Pugh, and I like brown eyes. I think brown eye superiority.
Okay.
Like the right brown eye. It's got to be that one where like when the light hits it, you know, it's like, whoa, falling in.
Okay.
You ever have that happen to you? You ever look at the lady's brown eyes in the right sunlight, and you're like, whoa, I'm falling in.
I mean, I guess I have looked in a woman's, I don't really care about color, but I have looked in a woman's eyes and been like, you have very beautiful eyes.
And then you're like, fuck, I need top surgery.
Okay, not quite that, but you know what? Oh. Also, that callback was better than the joke itself.
It's a good joke.
Try that at any open mic.
It will kill.
No, it won't.
People will cheer my name.
Do it Sunday.
They'll go, Leeson L. Gieb, and he's the one who points the way of comedy.
I'm happy you're happy.
Give him the family atomics. Give him the funny stop atomics.
Okay, so... I'm going to start this. We'll do the intro in a second, but I'm going to...
We can do another intro if you want. I got tons.
No, I actually like this. Let's just go into the episode. Keep it simple. But I'm going to start this off before any of the intro officially starts by saying I enjoyed this movie more than the first one.
Good. Otherwise, I have to squeeze your head like an egg.
That is my takeaway from it.
You look like the guy in Beetlejuice after I'm done with you.
I enjoyed this movie thoroughly.
As you should.
It did not sway me for, like...
As you should.
I get the hype. I don't fully agree with all the hype, but I enjoyed this movie thoroughly. It was fun.
Just hate sci-fi except for Tron.
No, I just... I watched this movie and I'm like, this was an entertaining movie. I have more to say, obviously, otherwise we wouldn't have a podcast, but like, I don't have much more of an initial thought other than this was entertaining. And then I go to read the reviews and it's like, this is the masterpiece of our time. And I'm like, that was thoroughly entertaining.
The Protestant mind cannot comprehend the glory of a true Messiah figure.
Oh my God.
Welcome to the Two Men in a Movie podcast, where each week one man shows another man a movie he can't believe he hasn't seen. As always, I'm your properly Messiah-respecting, prophecy Bible-thumping host, Matthew Olenchek. Joined as always about my doubtful grape juice instead of wine co-host work husband Harrison Poole. And he thought it was a metaphor.
I've had communion.
It's the miracle of transubstantiation. Like the miracle of drinking the worm piss.
So annoyed at you right now. But like,
it's the same. That's what it's a metaphor for.
Okay.
The worm piss is the actual body of Christ.
Okay.
The miracle of transubstantiation.
I'm doing. Other than you decided to all of a sudden go from having a conversation to being a jester instead of being a real person for half a goddamn second, I'm doing all right. I'm hitting the road this weekend in Niles, Michigan. I need to post about that tonight and tomorrow. Thank you for reminding me.
You're welcome.
This will be out
really,
by then.
You should thank Catholic Christ, but...
This will be out by then, so honestly, I should have, you know what, I should get better at marketing myself.
Dude just puts me in a religious mood and makes me want to go to Mass.
Okay, yeah. Go. Are you going to go this Sunday?
No, it's too early. It's going to fade by then. I'd have to watch Dune and then be like, yeah, let's go. But like by the time we get to the issue with Mass, truly, is it's too fucking early. It's too, it's God's, it's the fucking Lord's Day of Rest. You can move it to like 10, 11.
You would still be asleep.
I can make 11.
Yeah, sure, you could
because
make 11.
I refuse to wake up before 9.
And yet, when I asked that we do the records at 1 on Sunday, you were like, I need the day for rest.
Are you equating yourself to Christ?
No.
Like, you're saying your time should be as valued to me as Christ's? Jesus Christ.
Holy shit. I'm so kidding. No, but I am saying that if we're talking hypotheticals, let's have the one that could actually practically happen. But I like this movie. It was good. It was very good. I enjoyed it very thoroughly. I really dug the religion stuff more here. I do not like Christopher Walken as the emperor. I like basically everyone else. I do not like Christopher Walken. He has such a very distinct vocal pattern that I not only don't take him seriously as the part, but I would not take the Emperor seriously with that vocal pattern.
Yeah, that's why he'd be dead.
Okay. And I wouldn't have to fucking watch this movie or deal with this podcast.
You would just, you know, the Emperor comes over there and you're like, oh, why are you talking like that? Stab, stab, stab.
Yeah.
Your bloodline erased.
I'm not burning
on a stake in the sands of Arrakis.
I'm trying not to have kids, baby. That's up to my brother. Like, that's if he wants
your
to
brother continue. We could kill too. That's your bloodline.
Nah,
your whole bloodline.
He doesn't live there, so
they'll hunt them down. They killed all the guys back on the planet. They didn't kill the Atreides on Arrakis and said, well, that's good enough. They culled them off the planet.
Okay.
Killed them all. That's how you get
so they
the
went to
life.
Two locations. Ooh.
That's where two people live. Hey, guess what? Killing you and your brother would be two houses. That's okay. Two locations.
They don't know where he is, though.
He's so. The emperor. He would know. There's a phone book.
No, there's not. They just have an old oracle who doesn't know fucking shit, and Lady Jessica is smarter than. Like
she knows shit. She's just dumb.
Sure.
She's too arrogant. She's blinded by her arrogance. There are two things I want to get out of the way, which are the two things in this movie. I'm rapidly forgetting one of them. But there's like two things that are shown in this movie and they don't super like explain it in the movie because it's explained in the text.
Okay.
I've already forgotten the second one. But the first one is that he cannot read minds.
Paul?
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Because when he's like telling those people those things, he's seeing possible futures where they told him it because he can see all the futures.
So yeah.
He's just taking that information. I forgot what the second thing is. It's cool though.
Okay.
Oh, it's the so it's actually like super like bad to shoot nukes at people in this universe. Like it's against the law.
I mean, it's generally against the law.
No, we do it to entire country.
But we do it all the time. Just because we do it doesn't mean it's not against the law.
But so in order to not like make that great houses angrier, he launched them at the mountains because technically, even if the rocks kill those people, the nukes didn't.
Yeah.
So it's legally safe.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The smart man, that Paul Atreides.
They're really setting up for Dune Messiah, aren't they? Dune Messiah is going to be two parts, isn't it?
Probably, yeah.
We've already set the precedent that as long as this podcast is going, we're going to watch the new Dune movies.
Hell yeah, Dune Messiah. That's when it gets fucking good. That's the holy war, baby.
If we think about it, I'll watch it in theaters and then maybe these goddamn movies will say something to me. But they do not work to their fullest effect outside of IMAX. This one works better than the first one. I don't
call him out, Philip. Call him out.
Whatever, dude. You and I could disagree. I'm so sorry.
You seem so put on about it.
I'm not put on.
Yo, you're rubbing your forehead. You're covering your eyes. You're like, they're fine. They're fine.
They're fine. They're very good. Honestly, I would argue that the Dune Part 2 is a soft grate. I liked it a lot. It's like an 8. It's really fucking good. Masterpiece of our time is a little much. But at the same time, people are allowed to have their opinion.
Would you consider Lord of the Rings a masterpiece of its time?
Sure. Yeah. Mm. I mean, I have... Sure, I have the same thing. I have a very similar about the Lord. Here's okay.
It's no School of Rock.
It isn't. No, but I think okay. So
maybe.
I think
maybe
my
Paul
issue.
Atreides was played by Jack Black.
You made this joke last time. Maybe
did I?
Yes,
it works.
No, okay. My issue with those movies is they're so big and important that I don't care. To sound like a dunce, and it's not like I don't enjoy them, but they are not like life shaping for me.
Like I say a lot of hot takes, like the amount of people that I got angry because I said like octopi are the devil's creatures.
Okay.
A lot of people get angry at that because a lot of people like octopi because the devil's seductive. But I feel like you would anger more people if you like went on a, like if I said that on a stage, I'd be like, oh, boo, get him off. And then if you went on the stage afterwards and said, Lord of the Rings and Dune are too big and important, so I think they're kind of dumb and I don't care. School of Rock's better.
I don't care. Fucking lynch me. School of Rock is better. I like that movie better. They are totemic, but they want to feel totemic in a way that it insists upon itself. That
is the worst criticism of film.
No, I can be heavily, like, I can heavily critique the idea.
Saying that it insists upon itself.
They do. They insist upon themselves, and they're good, and I like, they're fine. It's not that I don't like them.
There's that one clip of Family Guy where they're discussing The Godfather, and he says it insists upon itself. And someone said, Seth MacFarlane, what the fuck does that mean? And he said, a film professor said it once, and I thought it was just the most pretentious, stupid, meaningless thing I've ever heard. So I'm like, I have to use it, because it's so fucking funny. It just means you don't understand it if you say it. He's like, that just means that like you haven't engaged with the piece at all. And you're like, it insists upon itself.
Yeah. I like that meme. But that is, I mean, name, you know what I'm trying to say?
I think it's just totemic because it is. Because it is. It appears to be this thing because it is.
Okay.
Like just because something's grand doesn't mean it's quote unquote insisting upon itself. Some things just have grandeur to them because they're made and that's what comes out.
Okay, that doesn't mean that I have to view them as masterpiece. Like, I understand Lord of the Rings. I understand Dune. They're fine. They're very entertaining movies. They're slightly elevated popcorn movies. Like I don't understand. I guess I don't get what the hype is. I thought I did having watched these movies, and I'm like, I get what people like out of this. I get how people can get more out of this than I can. Also, I'm coming from a position of someone who likes this movie, so like I don't understand how this was a wild take last episode and how this is a wild take now. Like, I enjoy this movie. I just don't like how self-important it feels, or not even self-important, but I mean, it is self-important. It wants to believe that it is this important thing, and maybe it is this important thing. Maybe it is the Lord of the Rings of our time. Honestly, it probably is. I have a similar feelings about Lord of the Rings. At some point, something becomes so big and totemic that something in my brain just disconnects, and I cease
truly
caring.
A Protestant mindset. It needs to be. I don't understand. I guess that's what I don't get about the criticism, is the idea that if something's big and important, that can be a criticism of it.
No, it's not. I just think when something tells you over and over and over again, I am important, I am important, I am important.
I just think it's coming off as important, and so then you're ascribing that it's saying this.
I don't think it's coming off as important, though. It's coming off as elevated popcorn movies, and then everyone else is saying it's important, it's important, it's important, and Villeneuve is saying it's important, it's important, it's important. Like, it's good. It's good. I would argue it's soft great. This is a great movie. It's fine. Like, let it be dumb. Let it be dumb popcorn movies. Let it be smart popcorn movies. Just I don't understand why people are caring so much about this thing. And I understand that my emotion toward it is me caring about the thing, but I don't understand why I care about this thing so much.
It's just when you say School of Rock's a better movie.
Yeah. I like School of Rock more.
It's the same
I don't. What do you mean?
After you said that Jack Black was the, and it's really where my bewilderment of this take comes from. It's in the same place, which is that after you said Jack Black was the greatest actor of all time, and I went to Tibet to study amongst the monks to try to comprehend this riddle that presented to me, it's because, again, he's not a bad actor.
Right.
And so, like, it is a take that I don't think's correct at all, but it's not coming from, like a bad place. Like, you're not, like if you said The Rock was the greatest actor of all time, you're just a fucking idiot.
Sure.
You've just chosen a bad actor, but you've chosen someone who's like a decent actor, a good actor in the roles he plays. And says this, and it's the same thing where you're like, I like these movies, and then you have these like, and so it's like there's a part in there that's like logical and understanding and like good, and then it veers into the take. I think that's just harder for me to digest than an entirely bad take.
What
you said, I hate these movies and they suck and they're too self-important. That's an easier take for me to swallow than the same thing. But I like them.
I like this movie and it's self-important. With that being said, I like this movie.
I think you just have a problem with grandeur.
Maybe. Honestly, it truly could be. Like, I'm not against that.
Between these movies and like saying, oh, you know, I desire fame, and you're like, that's sad. I think there is this inner rejection of grandeur and importance deep in your soul.
Okay.
Did your parents love you?
Yeah.
Did you have happy Christmases?
Yeah.
Normally, if you like Christmas, you know, you like big grand things. In my experience of polling people,
I like Christmas.
It's like how everyone who likes Halloween more than Christmas had a worse childhood than someone who likes Christmas more than Halloween.
I like Halloween more than Christmas, but I had a fine childhood. It was fine. I did not enjoy going to church school for 13 years, but if that's the biggest complaint that I have in life, at this point, I'm pushing 30. I can't blame
everything
on it.
We're going to find out that everything on a repressed memory where, like, your parents would dress up as kings and queens and be like, we're important, bow to us. And you're like, no. And, like, you repress that, but that's why you're like, insists upon itself.
You know what, baby?
Dressing you up in a little jester costume. Which is also where your love of comedy comes from. I've cracked it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Call my parents. Ask them.
I was going to ask my therapist if she thinks that's correct.
That's so dumb.
So many times in therapy, I'm like, hey, I have this thought about my friend's mental health. What do you think? She's like, why are you in therapy? I'm like, I haven't done it before. Something new.
I don't know. I guess I'll start with what I think this movie does better. I think not that the first movie has bad pacing, but this is much better paced, which is weird because it's like 20 minutes longer. And it's only because you warned me. I would have a lot more issues with the weird 7-6-7-act structure if I didn't go in expecting. Because the first movie, for like all of my issues with it, is like structured like a movie. This one is structured like a weird, like a, it is like a stage play.
It's
but
a stage
like,
play or an epic or a saga, because it's a much longer form thing, plot-wise, because it's you know, it's not necessarily a story's, as like, this is what happens, so much as like, this is the rise to power of the Lee Sin-el-Geeb, the he who points the way in the start of the Holy War.
Right. The performances are better. I think that like, now that they played the part once, they figured out how to play the part and just like played it. Everyone was solid. No one really bugged me outside of Christopher Walken. And, it's truly just cause I can't take, oh my God, I forget the exact quote, but he has one quote where he's just Christopher Walken. And I laughed like, and again, I would have been slain had I been in the court and that happened, but I would have laughed in the court when that happened.
I think he does a pretty good job normally in movies. He's much more Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
Like, when he's discussing with his daughter while having tea, it's barely there at all. I'm like, wow, good job.
I forget who says this. And John Malkovich is the same way, in that they're both very great actors, but they're sun-dried tomatoes on a sandwich. Like, if you have just enough of it, perfect. If you have too many of them, that's a sun-dried tomato sandwich. It doesn't matter like what the other toppings are. All you can taste when you take that bite is sun-dried tomatoes. So, and I think he does fine, like with all the screen time. I just think, I don't know, there's a slight miscalculation, but like that's just a personal thing.
I mean, the thing that throws me off is like, when the fuck did he have his daughter? When he's like 60?
Because he's, yeah, I mean, he'd be like late 40s.
So like older, but not like.
Yeah, not like, yeah, not like geriatric. Because, yeah, let's pretend he's 70, she's 25. I mean, yeah, like 45.
When this movie came out, I think she was like 28. I think me and her are the same age.
I mean, we're around the same age as all
no,
of them.
No, I mean, like, I am the same. I think it's Timothy Chalamet that, like, his birthday is like 2 months after mine.
This is a weird point in life also where like the new class of what the greats are like are our age. But like we're way too old for I don't know who half of the young stars are anymore.
She is a year and 8 days younger than me.
Nice.
Not good.
It could work out.
I don't know who Jojo Sriracha is.
Siwa.
Yeah, I have no idea what the fuck's going on there. I just see things keep popping up. And it's like, she said fuck. And I'm like, okay. And Vic was telling me about how she has this issue where a lot of the artists she likes keep collabing with like whiny white boy rappers who make all their song titles like all lowercase.
Okay.
And it's like one word. And I'm like, I've never experienced, this is truly the millennial Zoomer vibe. I've never experienced this. And I never will. It's right now, it's like I'm telling my dad about Pokemon. Like, he's just like, nice. He has no idea what the fuck I'm talking about. You're just saying names I do not fucking know.
Can you give me any of them? Because Vic and I are the same age, and I doubt I know any of these people.
M period E.
Nope.
Who's collabing with Susanna Joffe.
I know neither of them.
Do you listen to current music?
Yeah.
Really, really convincing.
Yeah, I mean, what do we count as current?
Yeah.
What do we count as current?
Like, you know, the current artists, the pop scene and stuff.
I listen to, I'll spin some Sabrina Carpenter and Chappell Roan.
Okay, good. So terrified you're going to say something. I have to be like, Harrison, that was 10 years ago.
No, I mean, I'll spin some Carly Rae Jepsen.
Are you like, no Macklemore?
Honestly, you know what? We'll diverge for the movie for half a second. Who are some of my modern artists I listen to? Semler, she's big in the gospel scene. Gospel, like weird alt country, ex-evangelical Christian. That punk band is 15 years old. That punk band is 10 years old. That punk band is 10 years old. I mean, Brittany Howard is new, but she was in Alabama Shakes 15 years ago.
Dua Lipa new?
That's the thing.
She's current.
When does Dua Lipa... That's a line. That's a good line. Is Dua Lipa new or is Dua Lipa entering like some kind of the last class?
She's current.
Okay. I mean, I don't listen to Dua Lipa, but like...
Yeah, that's a shame.
Like, okay. So if that's the line... Hot Mulligan, their debut came out in 2018.
That's just technically making a new album, so I guess she's current.
That's not... Yeah. Idols came out in 2017. They rip. They're great. I just found this new EP for this band called Like Roses, and they're awesome. They're like the newish style of pop punk, but like
I think Spotify I really rap like them. Should have a thing where it shows you what like years your music's in. I think that'd be a good addition to your Spotify rap. You know, like a little like half pie graph. You know,
sure.
This is all the music you're listening to is from.
Yeah, Ray Khalil's studio debut came out last year. I liked that project a lot.
It's like outside of like Dua Lipa, some pop stars like Chappell Roan, I'm pretty sure most of my music's between 2007 and 2016.
Stand Atlantic came out in 2017. Is that new?
Buddy, that's like
that's 8 years. That's not bad.
It is bad because people who can like vote now were 10 when it came out.
Okay.
That's a long time.
That's not that long.
10 years is a long time.
That's not that long.
10 years is a long time.
No, it's not.
Talk to someone 10 years younger than you about, and just like, I worked with a bunch of people who were 10 years younger than me at that cafe, And just the Gulf was just, it was, because this was just widespread. This was widespread, so I don't think it's any particular demographic. And I had to show most of them how to use a handheld phone.
Okay.
Like, it's a Gulf. 10 years is a Gulf. That's a generation.
Sure.
It's a long time. Ten years is a long time.
It's a long time. I'm not.
It's a long time.
10 years is. I mean, 17. That's, yeah. Outside of my nephew, I should not be, and he's 16. But I should not be talking about it in age.
Just age, like difference in age. Just think about like how much of your life has changed in 10 years. 10 years is a long time.
Sure. At this point in time, sure. The difference between 50 and 60, probably not the same as the difference between 20 and 30.
But it's still like a long period of time.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. Like 10 years is, you're like, it's 2017. 2017 isn't too long ago. It's a long, that's like a decade.
That wasn't that long ago. That was like 8 years ago.
That's a long time.
No, okay. You and I are just going to have to agree to disagree on that.
How is 8 years not a long time? How much things happened in... That's like two presidential terms. That's so much time. So much things happened in 8 years. That's like a tenth of the average male lifespan. It's a long time.
Okay, sure. It is a significant amount of time at this period in our lives.
Stop your issues. You're viewing it through like your life. I'm saying as just a period of time.
As a period of time, it's nothing. Because if we're viewing it as a period of time, then we have to view it as a period of all time.
I'm saying like in the human experience for humanity, 10 years is that's a decade. That's a long period of time. That's the difference between literally the 50s and the 60s. Those are two separate decades. It's a good chunk of time.
Okay. Like, I'm not trying to argue. This is not me being combative. This is me accepting your premise, not even rejecting it, truly accepting your premise from your viewpoint, from how you view it.
A decade's a while. A decade's a long time.
A decade's a while, sure. The difference between, like, 20 and 30, and the difference between like 60 to 70 or 50 to 60.
I'm not talking about our ages. I'm saying that 2017.
No, but I'm saying the person, if we're viewing it in lifespan, the person that you are. Lifespan.
I'm saying that from any metric, 2017 was a while ago. It's a long time ago. Yes, if I ask my mom has no conception of time. She doesn't even remember when 9/11 happened. If you ask my uncle, like, was 2017 a long time ago? They go, yeah, they're like 60. It's not like a lot hasn't changed for them personally because they're old, but that's a lot happens in 10 years. That's a good length of time. So yes, 2017 was a long time ago.
It was not that long ago.
It was long.
It was not that long ago.
Especially when it comes to music.
I don't, because you can view it of one of two ways. You can view it in comparison to time, in which case you view it in comparison to time, in which it's nothing, or you view it in comparison to a personal life.
A measurement of time, of human history. A lot, 10 years is a significant chunk of time. It's a long time.
Okay, can we get to talking about the movie?
Sure, let's go back to doing the same thing, but about the movie.
Honestly, hell yeah. Now Zendaya is great in this movie. What was that little wince for? Zendaya's great in this movie.
That wasn't about Zendaya.
Oh, that was about you not being able to let go of the past?
No, that was my bad back.
Oh, okay.
Listen, popped.
Okay. Let me know.
I slept on it wrong.
Dude, I feel that. I was going to make a joke. And no, I can't even. I'm so sorry. I have too much empathy for that. Sympathy is when I can feel like I have been in that situation also, right? Because I have sympathy for that.
I have like neither. I don't know. The big problem I'm having is that since I've been working out, I got bigger. So now I don't fit the same way when I sleep because I'm rounder. And so it's been a lot of me struggling to figure out how to put my long limbs and where to put them and where to rest them.
Yeah.
I have flat armpits.
Okay.
It's wild. They used to be just like little caves. Little caves the Fremen could live inside and wage war. I do like how just cool the Fremen are. How just chill the Fremen are.
I wouldn't call them chill, but yes, they are very cool. They're
hanging out and just having a great time, hugging each other.
And they have weird, like... Weird's the wrong term because it's religion and they can believe whatever they believe, but they have this like very like straight line mindset of like, we're gonna have this whole mass and listen to this white boy scream for 45 minutes. Like,
yeah, American Christianity.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. It's weird that it's weird then too.
I feel if you gave Stilgar a beer, he'd love it and he'd be a great guy to drink with.
Sure. I mean, it would depend on the situation. I wouldn't want to ever talk philosophy with Stilgar, just because I feel like he would get way too in the weeds way too quick, and we're way too sober for that. But
I will say you would likely say something in the Fremen camp, maybe not even something about religion, and they would throw you into a worm.
Like what?
I don't know, because like, I don't know, it just, the prophecy insists upon itself, and they would feed you to a worm.
I would not say that. I would be like, good for you for believing. You have your belief system, and I'm happy you have your belief system. And as long as it's not causing issues for other people, I don't care what your belief system is. I would be like the Northerners. I would be like the Northern Fremen and just be like, good on you, Pops. Like... That's the old school thinking, but like, good on you. Also, it's weird that even in the desert, they want to have they want to like call the South uneducated. That's a weird thing that even in sci-fi world, we can't get away from the fact that we view the underfunded education system of the American South to like make fun of them, even when they're like human aliens.
That's uniquely an American thing. I think largely globally, the idea of the global South being less developed is a very prevalent attitude to have, because like that includes like, you know, Africa, South America, and all those countries.
Sure, but this is a very this is a very American movie made in Hollywood. So I like, I'm viewing it as like in the mindset as he's viewing it in a very American.
Comes from a book, which I think was also American, but
yeah,
not necessarily American.
Because the dude got into like sandworms and transcendental meditation because he took some LSD or some shit.
Yeah.
Like, that's basically how... And then 6 books later, we now have 2 okay episodes of a podcast because of it.
I mean, that's like... that's also... I mean, it's really just... It's weird because I feel like in most European countries, the North is seen as worse. Like in England, you know, the Northerners are the more uncouth, like, ones. And like, Southern Italians hate Northern Italians.
Okay.
They're like really racist against them.
I mean, sure. The Southern Italians killed Jesus. So like, I don't really care what they think about. I don't really care what they think about racism. I will say, I think the one thing Dune 1 has over this movie is that while I think this movie is better, I think Dune 1 has key scenes that I think work. Like, I like, I can pick out more specific scenes, while with Dune, I can maybe do like 2 or 3, but I can just like, it's just a whole weird desert landscape in my head. Like there's the he rides the worm,
the sand crawler scene, there's the attack on the emperor's like compound he's got going on, there's the final fight.
That's the same in my head. The Emperor's Compound is all one thing, because it's one big last fight.
I'm splitting that up, because they're different narrative purposes, I think.
He rides the worm. She takes the medicine.
There's the fight at the... she takes her sippy good medicine.
Yeah.
There's the fight good worm piss. At the...
I think it's worm blood, but still.
On the Harkonnen planet, there's...
There's the gladiator scene, sure.
There's the gladiator scene. There's the... the Gurney scene when he's reunited with Gurney.
See, in my head, that's not its own, like, that's not that it's not its own thing. It's just that that's a thing that also happens. I've kind of wrapped that in as before he screams, like before he's just screaming for 45 minutes giving a sermon. Like, I understand that the Gurney thing happens, but that to me is way less, like, that's way less important to me than like he's screaming for 45 minutes and everyone praises that performance and it's just him screaming for 45 minutes.
I feel like a lot. I feel like maybe there's just trauma being exposed to American Christianity here that I do not have as a Catholic. That's influenced how I view this movie, because you had experienced like American Protestantism, and that just left a scar on your soul of screaming men screaming about God. But as a Catholic, religion was a very solemn, very standard thing for me.
Okay.
And I feel like, I don't know, you just keep going back to him screaming out God as a point you bring up. And I'm like,
I brought it up like twice.
I just feel like, oh, maybe that's something. Maybe it's just...
Everyone praises that performance, it's and it's just him screaming. It's just him screaming. I can scream. Like, it's not that... It's fine. It works. It's very... It's entertaining.
I mean, you can boil down any performance to that.
You can boil down a lot of performances to that. You have to reach a certain level of intensity and believability that I don't think he reaches. But also, if everything has to come back to Jack Black being the greatest actor of all time, in my opinion, because apparently everything does. What Jack Black does best than any other actor, in my opinion, is that
everything, because he's the greatest of all time.
No, he just does what I value most in that... I forget that he's acting in a way, like, and not in like a methody way, but in a way that like, it literally feels like you plucked this guy and you put him in this world and he has adapted so well into this world that he just becomes believable.
See, this is where he's my Timothy Chalamet. Cause I'll agree. I don't believe he's acting, but that's, but what I'm saying is like he's in that world. He's not acting. He's in that world. But it's just Jack Black to me. It's just as though you just taken Jack Black and stuck him in a different world.
No, that's not Jack Black to me. That's
everything I see. I'm like, that's just Jack Black.
No, I don't have
Panda. Jack Black.
Nope, that's Poe.
Just Jack. That's
Bowser. Bowser is the best performance of the 2020s.
Fucking pretty much every live action movie he's in that I've seen. Just Jack Black.
No, he just is that character in a way that is so earnestly believable.
Jack Black, who's a miner, is going to be Minecraft. I'm going to say, that's Jack Black if he lived in Minecraft.
Okay, that's fine. I don't see that. I just, like, in my head, his character as the brother in Orange County and Dewey Finn and Nacho from Nacho Libre are all three separate characters, and they're all three amazing performances.
Jack Black,
none of them feel like they're acts.
I see Jack Black high, Jack Black prime, and Jack Black playing a Mexican.
Nope, that is...
When I see School of Rock, that's also the thing with the School of Rock. School of Rock is the movie that when I see Jack Black, I'm like, that's just Jack Black.
No, that's the great...
That's just pure Jack Black.
That's a top 10 performance ever for me. Ever.
Oh, my God.
Jack Black probably has two of my top 10 performances ever, and it's this it's School of Rock and Bernie.
He's the greatest actor of all time.
He's my favorite greatest. You know what? Maybe I used some weird objective term with greatest. He is my favorite actor of all time. He does.
He's objective. He said he was the greatest actor of all time, and that Bowser was the best performance.
Yeah, to me.
Of that.
Yeah. First off, I'll go to bat that Bowser is the best performance of the 2020s. I'm not pretending to be the arbiter of truth. I am not that narcissistic. But in my opinion, Bowser is the best. Is the best performance. At the 2020s, there are performances that are very good and come close, but anyway, I'm thoroughly impressed with like the Daniel Day-Lewis's and the Philip Seymour Hoffman's, but they are like,
it's gonna be a great Patreon episode.
They're like they're good and they're very good actors, and I believe them as the character, and then on some level sometimes they just turn screamy, and like, congratulations, I know you can go there, but like, I don't, that doesn't matter, I don't care. What I matter more is, no, but what I care more about is this ultimately, do I think that this character feels human and real and like believable in a way that resonates with me?
I'm imagining we have some experts on in person for your defense trial of Jack Black.
There are no experts on this weird subjective opinion.
We're bringing other guests we've had on that have good experience and knowledge of film is what I mean. Not like I'm an expert on what makes a good actor, but like, you know, people who are in the film scene, who have like either been to film school or like maybe they're trying to get some people who have worked in the industry or some people who are just related to entertainment, we'll get them on. And then we'll have call-ins from the Patreon. The patrons can send in audio clips and we'll play as like...
And I'll combat them?
You'll okay. you'll have to address their statements.
Okay. That's fine. It all just comes down to what do I value in a performance versus what do they value in a performance. And at some level, it's like the amount of ingredients that is put into a performance, what resonates with someone. Like, there is no objective, like... There is no, like, objective best actor or objective best movie or best performance. It's all about, like, what works the best for the individual viewer. And I don't want, like, I don't have a wholly individualistic view of art, but I have a more individualistic view than a collectivist view. And I think that's just because it's harder to define objective terms. And if we are going to define objective terms, then we all need to agree on what the terms are. Like,
I think that there is in our society of people who watch movies, largely a collective agreement on many things, on like who's a good actor and who's a bad actor. I'd argue. I'm not sure if we're able to define that as a society, but I think that as a humanity has vibed it together and be like, no, that's a good actor, and like that's a bad actor. Like how like most people are like Daniel Day-Lewis is a good actor.
Daniel Day-Lewis is a great actor.
Most people are like, you know, like
I like Jack Black.
Leonardo DiCaprio is a great actor. Most people would not say Jack Black is a better actor.
That's fine. Leonardo DiCaprio is a great actor. Leonardo DiCaprio is a great actor. I'm just going to leave it at that. I have.
We don't know what you're about to say.
I have. No, it's not even. It's not the Jack Black. That actually isn't what I was going to say. I was going to add caveats. With that being said,
what's the caveats?
It's not worth. He just. No, he's a great actor. I want to know.
Stop and kiss my ring. Tell me.
No.
Paul Atreides, I want to know.
No, he's a great actor. I'll leave it at that. he is an actor who I have issues with depending on the role. He is a great actor. I will leave.
I'll have to make the next movie a Leonardo DiCaprio movie.
Sure, and then I'll talk about it more in depth then. Does that make you feel better?
No, I just want to know.
It's not important. It's just I don't feel like getting into it. He's a great actor. He's a better actor than me. I'll give him that. I'm not a good actor. He's a better actor than... That's the thing, is fucking... I'm a dumbass with a microphone and a film degree who has directed a couple stand-up specials and made a couple shorts that aren't... That, like, the specials are doing fine. They're not... They're doing fine. I'm actually very, very proud of the work that I did there. But, like, it's not like I'm winning Oscars anytime soon for any of my artistic output. So, like... I'm an asshole with a microphone. What does it matter what I think?
It's just wild takes. It does almost seem like you have like a weaker ability to suspend your disbelief. Maybe weaker is not the term I'm looking for, like in your own strength of it, but it's just a much more narrow area in which you're able to suspend disbelief.
Maybe.
Because a lot of times you're like, oh, I see the actor, or like I was still able to recognize their like who the actor was. Where I feel that like most people, like if an actor shows up in a movie, they on some level they go, oh, it's Jeff Goldblum, whatever.
Nah.
But then they're able to keep going with that.
Nope. If it's your job to pretend to be someone else, pretend to be someone else. Make me believe you're someone else. It's your job. It's what you're getting paid millions of dollars to do. Not everyone is getting paid millions of dollars to do it. But, like, it's what these actors are getting paid so much obnoxious amount of money to do. Make me believe it. Like, I don't want to see Leonardo DiCaprio. And that's a bad example because he disappears into a role sometimes. But like, I don't know. Pick an actor. I don't want to see Timothée Chalamet. I want to see Bob Dylan.
It's probably good that you're more of a tech guy. Because like, if you were a director, I feel like 20 years from now, there'd be a book about like, yeah, I fucking... I was on a movie with Harrison. He just kept screaming, "I still see you, Leo. I still see you." Like, you'd be a tired of it. You'd be like Stanley.
I would not be a tired.
You'd go down
with
Stanley
chill.
Kubrick of being like,
I am a director.
Expectation.
I am a director. Like, I've directed shit and it's been fine.
Well, yeah. But like I'd say, like a Hollywood movie, like, I still see Jeff Goldblum. I don't believe you're not Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, first off, I would not be a tyrant on set. I would honestly be pretty
no
chill.
I
would just be so happy that someone gave me the chance to make a movie.
No one's going home until I'm screaming, wondering what I'm doing on a desert planet in space. Until I don't know who any of you are. No one goes home.
I'm not going to scream at my actors.
No one goes home.
I'm not going to scream at them.
Exactly. I don't want to scream at my actors. I want to scream at Paul Atreides saying, take me home. Where am I? Who are you?
Is also, they did a better job this time. Like, I don't know. I think this is all coming down to, I have an issue with grandeur.
You have an issue with grandeur and very high expectations of what actors should be.
No, doing. I don't. I have very high expectations of high level actors getting paid millions of dollars to do their fucking job. Yes.
I just think,
going to give me $2 million to do a part, I am changing everything about myself. For $2 million, you better fucking believe it. I am changing who I am as a person. I am Austin Butler Elvising, completely changing my voice for the next decade to come. Like, you pay me $2 million, I'm going to do the damn job.
I just think
it's
like,
a job
like
that you're getting paid obscene amounts of money for.
You disappear so much the audience doesn't recognize you. It's just something that for the vast majority of people, I don't think happens. I don't think for the vast majority of people, like, you're like, yeah, I don't know who's playing this guy anymore.
It's not that I don't know who's playing this guy. It's that I cease to see the actor. It's that I see the character. That's my point.
Well, yeah,
it's not that, like, I look at Dewey Finn and I know Jack Black is playing Dewey Finn. I don't see Jack Black when I see Dewey Finn. That's a completely different character.
Like, when I look at Timothée Chalamet, I see Paul Atreides, but I'm also able to recognize that's Timothée Chalamet because I've seen videos of Timothée Chalamet talk about Red Dead Redemption. I know what he looks like.
I see Timothée Chalamet, and he does better in the second one where I feel he plays the part fine. He plays the part much more convincingly. But, like, I don't know how... I don't know how much he's getting paid, but if you're getting paid millions of dollars, I want you to fully immerse me.
But not in a grandiose way.
I mean, here's the thing. I said this with the last one, and I probably said it about this one. This movie would be 10 out of 10 if I saw it in IMAX. If I had the full immersion of this movie, I probably life-changing. That's why I defend, like, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit as much as, like, I have. It's why I defend The Hobbit as much as I have, is I saw those movies, like, in complete surround sound theaters, and so it was an immersive experience. This movie just doesn't work as well outside of the theater, and I think that's an issue with the movie. I think if your product is only built to fully succeed in one setting, I think that is a flaw. With that being said, I'm not saying it fails in the other setting.
Again, like I never saw the first one in the theaters.
Okay, but you saw the second one in theaters.
But like the first one, I was like, oh wow, this is fucking amazing. And that's why you want to go see the second one. Okay. I had the same reaction that I had seeing the second one. The only difference was that I wasn't physically shaken by the sound of the worm.
Fascinating, because no, going to a theater is a religious experience.
I prefer to see things in theaters. I think it's a very enjoyable way to enjoy a movie, but if a movie's good, I'm able to get the same experience from it on my phone, on the television, on a movie theater.
Not even kind of.
Because
there's a
it's
reason,
a good movie.
There's a reason, like, a lot of modern churches are reconstructed movie theaters, is because it's the way that, like, it's built around you, and it's, like, it is a holy place. It is a place, worship is the wrong word, but it is, like, a place of exaltation of a piece of art. Like, maybe exaltation is the wrong word, but it's the only one that I'm thinking of right now. But... I don't watch movies on my phone. I can't fucking
good,
stand
the
watching
themes,
a movie on my phone.
If the stories are good and the themes are good and the performances are good, they can be any size. They can be borrower size. They can be larger than life. It's gonna, the themes, the story, the acting's going to hit me. It's not really a scale dependent experience.
Okay.
I think a movie theater is a better experience, but I don't think it necessarily makes the movie better.
Okay.
That makes sense.
I understand that. I fully understand. I disagree with that thesis entirely, but I fully understand that thesis.
Like, I'd rather watch a movie in the theater.
Yeah, of course.
But if it's a good movie, I'm still going to walk away with it feeling the same way as if I saw it on my television.
Okay. It depends on the movie. I don't know. I think a movie of this scale, obviously, I don't feel the same way watching it on my television as I would have in the theater. I'm trying to think of something. I'll use Inside as an example. I saw Inside on my television and I've seen Inside in theater. And they are two completely different viewing experiences. I don't know what Bo Burnham.
Oh, yeah.
I saw Inside in theaters, but I saw it on my television first and was mesmerized with it. And then I saw Inside in theaters and it was bordering on a religious experience. All of the focus being directed, all of the surround immersion, all of I'm going to use the word exaltation again, the exaltation of the art form, elevating it to its highest point. Inside was better in the theater than it was on television. And I've seen it on television a dozen times, let's say. And I saw it in theaters once.
I wonder, and again, I'm bringing it back to this, but you know, we're talking about size or religious experiences.
Yeah, please.
I do wonder if it's the Protestant-Catholic split, because outside of a church in Protestantism, it's a much more personal faith. You don't have necessarily the grandiosity of the church that you would have. You don't have that bigger experience of it. Whereas Catholic churches are grand, but there's still that just as heavy and important is the rosary at the foot of your bed. Like on every level of that, there is importance no matter the scale. It's just as important no matter where you go. There's no difference in the spiritual dimension of it. Yeah, that makes sense.
That makes sense.
Every act has immense weight.
Maybe because there's not as much ritual to my religious upbringing to your religious upbringing. But I do think that my personal belief system is just as powerful and important outside of a church as it is inside of a church. Inside of a church, it's different.
I'm just talking about on an aspect of scale right now.
Sure. Because
I'm a huge proponent of, I think, religious, and I think most people would agree, their religious upbringing shape your worldview.
Yeah.
And I am a 100%. Huge proponent of stretching that to art.
Yeah.
Because, the person I share probably the most movie and art opinions with is Brandon. And Brandon was raised the same way I was, Catholic.
Okay.
So I think that that's such an interesting part of your worldview that it flavors, even if you move away from it, it flavors how you view the world.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I would argue that church is more of a community thing than an actual exaltation thing. With that being in a way that going to a movie theater isn't. I've been alone in movie theaters and had religious experiences multiple times, but in a way that if I were in church alone, just watching a band play and listening to a white man talk alone, talk at me alone in a room, I would not have the same experience.
Alone gods in that room.
Sure. Physically as a human, so not surrounded by other people. And we know God because we know other people. God is other people, but
God's in an empty church. That's my upbringing, because the empty church is a sanctified place wherein God dwells.
Yeah, God.
Or the Holy Spirit dwells.
Okay.
Or both. Maybe they all do.
I mean, God is in an empty church in my faith. He's not just there, but not that I'm saying he's just there with you. I don't know. In a way, the performative aspect of a full band and then a dude preaching for an hour.
What do you mean by band? Sorry. that band? Like what type of band?
Like a church band? Like guitar, bass, drums? I know you have Catholic piano choir. I've been to Catholic mass. Yeah, they're church bands.
It's like drums and a bass?
Yeah.
What do they play? Creed?
No. They play like Christian pop song, Christian pop rock. And they also play Hillsong, hymnal, not hymnal, but what you would define as a modern hymn.
It's a rock band setup.
Yeah. This is in... And also, there are some Protestants who think that that's unholy, but that's
wild to me.
Yeah, there were wars fought over this time. So
if I went to something, like, hey, want to join me at church? And I'm like, yeah, I have nothing else going on. And I went there and some guy put on a bass guitar, I would lose my fucking mind. Like, not out of anger, I would just cease to be tethered to reality and be so, I'd be like, woo, woo. I wouldn't know where I was. That's so insane to me. Like, I was invited to join someone at a Protestant prayer meeting.
Also, there are so many divisions of Protestantism. Bible study. You really need to, like, you really do kind of need to divide thoroughly.
Only if you're a Protestant. Only then does the distinction matter. But as a Catholic, there's Catholicism, Protestants, and there's fucking Orthodox, and those are the three divisions.
Sure.
Every Protestant looks pretty much the same to me, except Baptist is a bit louder.
That's insane. It all looks the same to me. It's so different. And I'm not even saying anyone is wrong.
It's all like in converted.
I'm just saying
it's
all
like Winn-Dixie's and movie theaters and it's a metaphor and shit. It all looks the same to me. But I was invited to like a Bible
Jesus
study.
Christ, yeah.
Because they offered, because I offered to help them pick up games for Warhammer. It's something I play Warhammer with. And they're worried about like a weekly thing we're going to do because they have like Bible study every other week on that day. And I'm like, I'll pick up games with you other days if you need, so you can stay in the league. And they invited me, and I'm like, you know, it would be fascinating to be in a space where everyone's like, I love God, and not like I love God in the way that I fear a stern, strict father, which is a very distant love that's tinged with, oh God, I hope he doesn't send me to hell or my room.
Sure. We also live in fear of a God sending us to eternal hell all the time. Like, 100% of the time. Trapped inside of me always is a 6-year-old terrified of going to hell. Like, you act like the idea of a fear of hell is a Catholic-only thing.
But there's that distinctive Catholic guilt, like a thing. It doesn't say the fear of going, but it is, because what that leads to is the constant upkeep to prevent. It's not that we're afraid of going to hell. We're afraid we're going to go to hell because we misstepped somewhere. Like, we're like, oh God, I didn't go to confession enough. Oh God, I didn't confess that sin. Oh, I have to go confess that. You know, I looked at a woman and I felt kind of horny. I have to go confess that sin or I will go to hell. Am I attending all the right masses? Am I taking the communion enough? Am I confessing enough? Am I praying on the rosary enough? Do I have enough stuff at home? Should I get some more prayer candles? Should I get some crucifixes? Should I get the house blessed? Should I get the palm leaves put up?
We're less ritualistic about it, but we do have the same fears for many of the same reasons. It's not specifically confession and rosary, but it is like missteps in my personal rituals of faith. The thing with Protestantism, in my own personal experience, is that you're right that it is more personal, but it's very like, it's personal within denomination. It's also personal within the person.
Like,
but
when you're afraid of hell, do you think you're going to hell because of you or God? Like, if you were to go to hell for something that was done, is the reason you go, is the primary person in you going to hell, you or God? Like, who's responsible there?
I did the bad thing. God is sending me.
See, I feel like in Catholicism, it's not, you don't even conceive of the self so much as just that God has decided to send me to hell. Like,
but you even say that it's because you misstepped.
I misstep, but it's not there's this sense of like harsher judgment, I guess, in the going to hell. Like, it's not so, like, a lot of times, because mostly Protestants in this country, I talk religion with everyone. But a lot of the times there is this idea that, like, I don't know, I get this feeling that, like, God doesn't want to send you to hell, you know? Where, when you view God, do you view him as someone who wants to send you to hell? Like, he's looking for the chance to send you to hell?
I don't know, it's not anything specific like that. It's more like it's more of an action consequence thing at least in my own personal upbringing or my own personal understanding of my upbringing, it's more of an action consequence thing than it is a he's constantly looking after you.
Yeah, so which like, is...
That's the fucking evil thing about the Catholic Church. But like...
There's the sword always hanging over your neck.
Yeah, it's the way to... Yeah, it's the way to control and subservient to people. Yeah. But like, it's very similar to pointed out in this movie that you control the people through fear and hope. And then he does that weird screamy line of that's not hope, that feels very out of place, but it's a very good performance, but it feels very out of place.
That's a person that was getting increasingly angry, having a small outburst, which is how really most fights go, is that it's not a constant screaming, like one person will yell and then the fight kind of devolves into something else.
I think I said that last week.
I don't think it's out of place.
But it's more, it's an escalation thing, or at least in my own personal anger thing, it's an escalation thing. It's not really like I'm at a 6, I'm at a 10, I'm at a 6. It's more like I'm at a 6, I'm at a 7, I'm at an 8, maybe I skip 8 and go straight to 9. But like there is like an escalation thing.
The whole time all that anger is boiling in him, so I think it just
came, yeah.
Yeah, that's, came out. I don't think it's out of place.
I think it's a good performance. I don't know. I had more thoughts on this, but like I'm running out of them.
I like the also that he's very much, although he accepts in the end, he very much is, he tries to get away from it.
Yes, he tries to fight destiny
incapable of doing so because everything is conspiring to send him to the South.
Yes. That you mentioned, and I would have gotten this anyway, but you mentioned that him as a tragic figure of like becoming a villain.
He's the tragic villain.
However, becoming a villain, but also not being able to fight your own destiny. Like that's the grand tragedy of Dune.
Yeah.
Other than the religious shit, that's probably the stuff that I liked the most, was him constantly trying to fight against God's will and then being a victim of God's will. And
those are the two themes of the series. So
I liked them. The themes are religion.
There's three themes, really. There's religion, the struggle against forces greater than yourself, and the danger of the Messiah figure, which is why he wrote Dune. He views it very much as a warning against Messiah figures, and that they're dangerous people who are just kind of pushed into the place by forces outside of their control.
Yeah,
and often lead to ruin.
Yeah, I mean, he wrote Dune because he took LSD and got really into sandworms. But there is some, yes. If you have to pick a theme, that's a very good theme to pick.
It's the stated theme.
But if these movies succeed in doing nothing else, it's that they make me excited for the next one. Like, I'm excited to see Dune Messiah Part 1. Like... I can't wait for Children of Dune Part 1, Part 2. Like, I can't wait for them to continue.
When Anna Joy Taylor will finally play her birth character.
I figure which one it is.
In one of the future ones.
It's got to be Messiah. She can't be pregnant for that long.
Yeah, but she has to get to Anna Joy Taylor age.
Sure.
She has to grow up into Anna Joy Taylor.
I mean, you can time skip. Time skips exist.
But I don't remember which book the time skip happens in.
Oh, Joy, no. No, and maybe I won't, but I'm going to be mighty annoyed if Anna Joy Taylor is just a voice for 4 movies. And then finally she shows up. It's going to be, Furiosa.
Let me check this really quick. It's a while before she becomes the religious figurehead, cult of personality, regent of the empire. After Paul Atreides goes into exile because of the stone blindness. After the birth of his children.
Okay.
And that is when we'll see Anna Joy Taylor.
Nice. Also, if we're talking about the birth of Paul Atreides' children, the Chani relationship I like it a lot. I think that it happens too quickly, but like once it happens,
I'm into it. Woman with a knife showed me how to.
I understand. No, listen. I understand. You would be rock hard trying to sleep with her immediately.
Okay, I'm gonna say. God, the sons first show up in God Emperor of Dune. Maybe that's when they first show up. So I'm gonna say that's when we'll see Anna Joy Taylor as a full. No. They show up in Dune Messiah. So maybe towards the end we'll see her at the very end. When are we gonna see that guy?
Is that Paul Atreides' half-worm son?
Yeah. So that's half worm. That's the God Emperor.
Spoil for me. How? Because I'm not going to remember. How does he have a half worm son?
I believe. Yeah, yeah. He bonds with a bunch of sandworm larvae.
Nice.
And he becomes half worm, the immortal half worm emperor, the God Emperor.
Okay. Listen, just because you'd be way too horny all the time, that you would think that a woman pulling a knife on you for no reason. Oh, all right, just probably a reason. It's self-defense.
She's never to pull. She could show me a knife.
I understand.
If a woman just takes a knife.
You're just. That's the issue with. I'm trying to talk about this through the lens of someone who values like the courtship period of romantic love, and you are horny all of the time.
Hey, do you want to see my knife? Is a very important part of the courtship. That's very important. I'm going to Google it right now. I'm going to pull up 50 books on the topic. Like, everyone's going to be on Quora. When do I show my knife?
But, like, once the relationship happens, I really like it a lot. It's really sweet. And it's like, there's a couple moments that I love, especially when she casually mentions how Paul and Gurney are foreigners. And then Paul goes, I'm not a foreigner. And she goes, oh shit, not to me, like, but to the desert. Like this really sweet moment of like, you're correct. I'm so sorry. You're like, I'm not trying to devalue you. To me, you are not a foreigner. You are a full freeman, however, to the desert. And then there's a couple of I don't want to lose you. The only way you will never lose me unless you lose yourself. And then he loses her because of the cruel fate of
the awful fate of having to marry Florence Pugh.
The cruel fate of the Lord.
I'm so sorry, Chani. This sucks. I don't really want to, but I have to go marry Florence Pugh.
This is so... I understand that in real life you care about romance and blah, 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 but you're so horny all the time, and it's so frustrating when trying to talk about shit like this.
It's a deep romantic yearning more than it's horniness. I don't think about fucking Florence Pugh.
Okay, but for Florence Pugh is different. You're right. For Florence Pugh, it's different specifically. I just mean in general.
I want a secure hand in a political marriage that leads to a dynasty for 1,000 years.
I hate you so much. I don't mean that even slightly. I love you. I'm so sorry I said that. I love you so much. You frustrate me so much. I
especially on that chain mail, you know.
Ooh. I'm so I hope you and Florence Pugh get together.
Little Joan of Arc action.
So much. You know what, Florence, if you're listening to this randomly, if you're one of our 6 listeners, please.
Hey, we have 120 listens. On Holly.
Holy shit.
It's still going.
Listen, Florence.
Also, we had a good amount. We had more than usual in Dune Part 1.
Nice. But Two Men Movie Podcast.
That's 120.
Yeah. Okay. Two Men Movie Podcast @gmail.com. Florence, or anyone who knows Florence, please get in touch. My friend has a weird parasocial love for you, and he would like to meet you.
I want to put her on a pedestal.
What?
I want to put her on a pedestal, a mark of a healthy relationship.
That's not the mark of a healthy relationship. You know what, Florence? Stay away. I'm trying to wingman for my friend who I love very much. For your own good, stay away.
She would fix me.
He has a weird parasocial relationship.
She would fix me.
He has a unhealthy parasocial relationship with you.
I don't think it's a parasocial
And I need you to stay away. Forget everything I've said up until this point.
I think it's recognizing that she's God's perfect woman. She is the very recreation of Eve. That's a woman right there. Look at that. If I show Plato that, he'd say, my ideal, that's a woman.
Okay, I'm...
Every aspect. I'm pretty sure if you measured the squareness and set of her shoulders, it'd be the golden ratio.
My brain just went blank.
Yeah, that's called religious ecstasy about thinking about Florence Pugh. I experienced that daily.
Fuck off. Do you have any thoughts, I guess final or otherwise? We'll see if we can land this plane. Like the last episode, we barely talked about the movie. However, unlike the last episode, I think these conversations are more interesting.
I don't know. I feel like if you listen to this podcast, you've probably already seen Dune, so I'm not going to say go see it. If you haven't, go see it. It'd be wild if you haven't. You listen to this podcast, in my opinion. Yeah, no, I'm fucking, let's, come on, guys. Let's all hold hands and pray and get God Emperor Dune. Because Messiah's coming, but I want God Emperor Dune. I want all these I want 90-year-old fucking, what's his name? I was going to call him Paul again. I always do it.
Denis Villeneuve?
Yeah, I want him, 90 years old, pumping up the last Dune movie. I want...
There are 6 books?
About, yeah.
I mean, Frank Herbert, yeah. Dune, official 6 books? Okay.
There, you know, it's a good... It's cinema, man. It's cinema, and it's just, you know, it's so rare these days that we get a big blockbuster movie that actually feels like it has heart put into it and love put into it and a care for, like, the art of cinema put into it. So, you know, go support Dune. Go support any big blockbuster movie that fucking has some heart to it, you know? I'm disappointed in all of you for not seeing Dungeons and Dragons enough.
My final thoughts are, I like this movie. I don't think it's a masterpiece, but I like this movie. Like, I like this movie a lot.
And?
I hope you and Florence Pugh get together in the end. Okay. Do you want to do socials?
Or, you know, if I can't have that, you know, take? Just being Discord buddies with Timothée Chalamet.
Oh, I thought you were about to name another woman. I'll be like, don't rank people.
No.
Don't be weird.
You know?
Don't be creepy, Matthew.
I just think, I think I could get along really well with Timothée Chalamet. We have a lot of the same interests and we're the same age. I think we'd get, it'd be fireworks.
On that note, do you want to do socials?
Yeah, I'll do socials.
So that Timothée Chalamet could reach out? So
Timothée Chalamet, if you want to reach out and, you know, we can play some video games or talk games. I'm always up. I know you have your opinions on how gaming's going, because anytime someone even slightly brings up out of politeness in an interview, so you like video games, you immediately go, that's what the interview's about now. And for real, that's real. It's like when every time someone brings up Warhammer to Henry Cavill, he's like, well, now we're talking about Warhammer. Those are my favorite actors, because I'm like, you get it. You don't give a shit about any of this. You're like, I'm going to talk about the thing I like now, because I'm so sick of doing interviews. If you want to be real with me, Timothée Chalamet, you can find me at Midwest_magician. We're doing this a bit backwards, but yeah, if any of you want to reach out and send me your fucking Sandworm X Reader fan fiction, I won't pay for that, but if you want to send me
if
that,
it's good enough.
I'm not paying for Sandworm, and you know what? I'm not gonna pay for Florence Pugh X Reader. I think it's weird. I think fucking writing X Reader fan fiction about real people is fucking weird.
That's the most sensible thing about your parasocial relationship with Florence Pugh that you've ever said.
There's so much Florence Pugh ex-reader fanfiction. I think it's fucking weird.
That's so appropriate and sensible and correct of an opinion to have.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, it just feels icky. Like, I'm not even over here being like, oh, I should be married to Florence Pugh. I just look at her like Saul gazing upon the light that made him Paul, you know? Like, that's my religious experience, looking at Florence Pugh. It's like staring into the, I'm just, what a woman.
But where could they send that Sandworm X-Reader?
Yeah, Sandworm X-Reader. If you send me, I will block, I want you down and I will murder you. You can send that at twomenmoviepodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you know why so many people are listening to All Out the Holly, send that there. You can find us on Instagram at Two Men Movie Podcast, and you can find us on YouTube at Two Men and a Movie Podcast. If you're curious on where something else, you know, just put in Two Men Movie Podcast. That's on those social media platforms.
You can find me on Instagram, TikTok, Lemonade, Threads. I mean, you can find me on Facebook at Harrison Poole, I guess. But HarrisonPoole.com, HARRISON.
Do not find me on Facebook.
Okay.
I will not accept friend requests unless you're Florence Pugh with Timothée Chalamet.
Does Facebook still do the, like, you can friend request with a message?
I don't think I've sent a friend request in fucking... People send friend requests to me. Do I look like the one who accepts them for... I can't fucking do it. What's the fucking... The quote, the big quote, you know? I am the one who accepts the friend request.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I haven't sent a friend request in fucking years.
If you can still send a message with your friend request, just casually mention, hey, I listen to the pod. This is a fan, whatever. Please, like, don't be weird about it. Because I get comics who friend request me who I don't know who you are. We've never worked together. I don't know who you are. I don't know if we've ever met. And I'm not trying to be rude, but, like, I don't want to accept from strangers. So if you have any way to let me know that, hey, I'm a listener of the pod, I'm a fan, maybe I'll try and set up a separate page now that I'm like trying to do this whole thing for a professional. But Harrison Poole, or you can find me on all the other stuff at harrisonpoole.com, harrisonpoole.com, harrisonpoole.com. Thank you so much to Tristan Hostetter for our theme music. Thank you guys for listening. This is the end of Sci-Fi Month. This is actually, I think, the end of our themed months for a little while. We're going to go back to just like regular back and forth movies the way we were.
We're also going to have some, we're having like at least one sci-fi movie next month.
Okay.
We're bringing a former guest back on.
I don't know if that's airing next month, but yes, we're recording it next month. Yeah.
Time's a circle.
Okay. But either next month or beginning of May, we're going to have Brandon back on for Valerian. But yeah, thank you for listening. Have a good day.
And kisses.
This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.